week's edition of Hypervisor Huddle. This week we have a guest from Microsoft with us, Matt McSpirit. Matt, what's your title of Microsoft?
My title at Microsoft is Partner Technology Advisor.
For our listeners, I actually found Matt because I was making a landing page for all of the Hypervisor Huddle records from the past and came across a blog that Matt wrote. He had tuned into a record we did with Edward Halecki back, I think, at the beginning of the summer and had some comments about some of the things that he said. Matt, do you want to recap what you said in your blog?
Yeah, so after listening to the podcast, it was informative, but there were a few facts that Edward kind of indicated, but they were not quite correct from the Microsoft perspective. So I kind of tried to correct those on my blog, just so people, if they'd listened to the podcast, could get all the facts straight, really. So that's all the blog was really about.
Yeah. Do you remember what the facts were?
So it's just some of the bits around, obviously the discussion was around free hypervisors and are things really free? And I think one of the points that Edward made was around, Hyper-V, yeah, it's free on the surface, but then you need other technologies to start to unlock things like live migration. And he quoted SCCM, which is Config Manager, which is actually our kind of patching tool. But none of the system center technologies that Microsoft produced, and this is what obviously blogged about, are actually required to unlock things like live migration, failover, high availability, that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of core stuff that's built into Hyper-V, either the free, Hyper-V server or the one that ships as part of Windows Server, before you need to start looking at System Center. And whether you choose System Center on top or not, a lot of it will come down to your environment and, your needs as an organization. So that's what kind of the blog really focused on.
So you're saying basically that you can just download Hyper-V for free and then start doing things like quick migration without any management software?
Yeah, well, not only quick migration, but live migration now in R2. Yeah, absolutely. To kind of clarify the scenario, basically, if I had, say, for example, two servers with some shared storage, obviously, that's what's required, whether it's on VMware or Microsoft, to do kind of live migration, all that stuff. So if I had a SAN and two servers, I could have something as simple as either a Win7 laptop or another R2 box somewhere else that could provide my kind of management GUI, and yet I could just download Hyper-V server R2, drop it onto those two servers, start creating virtual machines and live migrate them and fail them over it. And I've actually got a video on my blog that's entitled Bare Metal to Live Migration in Under an Hour. So it kind of just takes you through that whole journey and how simple it is to actually get going. So it's on the surface, yeah, it's incredibly easy to get going, and the video does drill into how you kind of configure the different bits. So it's for a lot of organizations that have got experience in deploying Windows as a Windows OS in general, they can pick up and run with this very, very quickly. So, and for customers, very low entry cost. And yeah, you know, more advanced stuff is kind of exposed when you do go into System Center, but the core functions and feature set is really strong.
But we could say the same. I mean, ESXi is free. Every company that has a hypervisor offers it for free. But the real benefit of this stuff is in the management software. So, I mean, Hyper-V is free, sure. ESX is free. Zen Server, the hypervisor, is free.
ESXi, free edition.
Yeah, I mean, you can get a hypervisor for free. That's just the naked platform there. But the real value is in the management stuff. So
you're absolutely right. You're absolutely spot on. And that's what Microsoft's kind of real go-to-market going forward is with System Center being this kind of overarching management suite that can, not only manage physical but virtual and, what's inside the virtual machine as well. But yeah, I mean, you could go ahead and download ESXi, but to get live migration and HA out of ESXi, then you go to the management, which, you'd want to do as an organization anyway. But on the Microsoft side, if you're a really small business and or you're just starting out on your virtualization journey and it's still a little bit magical to you, and how stuff kind of all runs in software and that kind of thing, then to get those kind of more enterprise-like, inverted commas, features like live migration, HA, and that kind of stuff, then the entry point is a little bit lower. And you can just do it from MMCs, which, let's face it, a lot of small businesses and IT admins are pretty familiar with. So
that's actually,
so it's a different approach.
Yeah, that's actually a good segue into one of the questions I had, which was, when do you think using Hyper-V makes more sense than perhaps using your more expensive counterpart?
I don't know. I think there's not going to be an occasion when it makes more sense from a value perspective, anyway, from a monetary perspective. I think when it's going to make more sense is, A, when it meets the needs of that customer. So if I was a customer today versus a customer 3 years ago, you know, what would I have chosen 3 years ago if I wanted to, if I knew what virtualization was and I was going to go with it? I would inevitably have gone down the VMware route, you know,
right.
They had the technology. But now, you know, I've got the opportunity to make the choice, and each one has comparable features. Yes, you know, we could argue whose hypervisor is better from a performance perspective. You know, we could all do that, and there'd be pros and cons of all three, but and more. But at the end of the day, for a customer to now have the choice to say, actually, I'm going to evaluate all three. I'm going to look whether it ticks my boxes or not. If it doesn't tick my boxes, then I'm going to rule it out. Simple as that. And that's what I would say. And whether you're a small business, a medium size, or an enterprise, you know, virtualization is going to save you money across the board. It's just how much money it's going to save you and whether it does exactly what you need it to do, and whether you can kind of extend it as well into the future. So I think Microsoft, the mid-market and the SMB is a massive space because, you know, those guys have, those typical organizations within that space haven't adopted virtualization as much as, say, the enterprise. You know, VMware has a lot of the, you know, the top 500, the Fortune 500 and all those kind of organizations because, you know, 3 years ago, they were the big guys who need, they had a lot of servers, you know, they needed to virtualize. But now we're even seeing enterprises now as they're coming to the end of their agreements. Maybe it's not the default choice to just carry on with what they've already invested in. Maybe they're looking at starting to think, well, do other technologies, whether it's a Citrix, whether it's a Hyper-V-based solution, do what we need to do. And I think a lot of it's coming down to how we can efficiently manage it, as you highlighted before. And Microsoft's got quite a strong play in the management side, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, is it your strategy that, you know, whoever is going to upgrade to Windows Server 2008 R2 will start using Hyper-V along with VMware? Because I know you're able to manage VMware through System Center as well as Hyper-V. It seems that the strategy is to get in the VMware shops and just be a, you know, side by side with them.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. We've got some big case studies actually that will be released over time in the UK, especially where, you know, they're a mix. The large organisations are a mixed shop, and they've already got VMware and they've got Hyper-V, and it was more cost effective to deploy Hyper-V in the branch, for example, because, you know, the licensing was more flexible of what they've already invested in. But that could be one mechanism to drive Hyper-V. I mean, a lot of organisations kind of were on 2003, and then 2008 came out, and there was a lot of compelling features in 2008 aside from Hyper-V, but they've been reinforced still further in R2. So maybe organisations are waiting for R2 for improvements in terminal services or remote desktop services, as it's been rebranded now, makes things nice and clear. And the other areas, things like direct access, branch cache. But then you've obviously got Hyper-V, which is an added carrot to dangle in front of people. But then again, for those people who are 2003, you know, and they're not ready to upgrade their infrastructure, they just want to get from the physical into the virtual, that's where Hyper-V Server R2 is quite attractive, because they can literally just go and download it, whack it on some tin, and there's loads of, you know, pieces of hardware that support Hyper-V and are getting certified and so on. And remember, we're not at launch yet. Launch is not till 22nd October, so we've got a bit of time before to get the ecosystem still kind of snowballing. But those guys can literally just, providing they've not got OEM licenses on those pieces of tin, but they can take that 2003 environment and virtualize on an R2 platform and gain the benefits through, you know, of what R2 provides around live migration, HA, and all the other cool bits and bobs. And that's even before they start, you know, they start looking at System Center, should they want to.
What are the limitations of using Hyper-V R2 on Windows Server 2003? Because isn't the 2008 platform sort of optimized
with it? Oh, yeah, absolutely. So just to kind of clear that up, you know, you wouldn't, Hyper-V Server R2 or Windows Server 2008 R2 Hyper-V are, kind of, they would sit on the hardware themselves. So you wouldn't use Hyper-V on top of 2003. You'd be, be virtualizing 2003 on top of Hyper-V in the same way you'd virtualize it on top of ESX or on top of Zen Server. And obviously, we provide integration tools to optimize performance of 2003 and 2000 and XP and Vista and so on to run on Hyper-V. But Win7 and R2, when you put those as virtual machines on Hyper-V R2, they're already kind of enlightened or optimized, ready to run. So, you know, customers are thinking about VDI, and, you know, there's a lot of kind of industry debate about whether VDI is the answer to the desktop problem and all that kind of stuff. But Win7 is a very optimized OS to run on Hyper-V in VDI type environments. So, you know, different solutions, different problems, and that kind of stuff. So,
how much progress has Microsoft made with getting the third party vendors and application vendors like Oracle to have their apps supported in Hyper-VR too?
Well, Oracle's very topical because obviously VMware at the moment are kind of pushing Oracle to try and get support, and it's not something I'm aware of at the moment. I mean, ecosystem-wise, aside from Oracle, who are quite, they've got a little bit of a reputation around, you know, being more reluctant to support their stuff in virtual environments, even on VMware. But other platforms, you know, what we're seeing is a big ISV, so independent software vendor, kind of ecosystem building around Hyper-V, whether it's software or whether it's third-party technologies around things like storage replication. And, you know, we're getting a lot of requests around VMware have an SRM type or an SRM product that enables you to kind of fail cross-site. What do Microsoft do? And out of the box, there's a lot in Windows Server, you know, R2 and Hyper-V R2, but that's now being extended by vendors like Hitachi, NetApp, DLI, DoubleTake, to name but a few, and HP as well. So there's a lot of an ecosystem building around. But in terms of software with inside the virtual machine, again, a lot of that would come down to the actual vendor who writes the software, but we don't see that being a blocker as of yet. It's not something we encounter a great deal.
Are you guys working with anyone, a third-party vendor, to get fault tolerance in? Because I know that's one of the things that Hyper-V R2 won't have that VMware does.
Yeah. So I believe, and when the announcements were made around Hyper-V R2, Marathon Technology announced that they were going to support R2 Hyper-V with their fault tolerance that they provide for Zen server currently. Okay. So, you know, when that ships and how much it will cost, no idea at this point. And how many people will need it, don't know. You know, on the VMware side, fantastic feature, you know, when you explain it conceptually, you know, how it all works. But then I think VMware, just like a lot of other software technologies out there, have got a few caveats to work through with that particular technology at this time. You know, it's still a bit of a version one. Don't get me wrong, though.
Yeah, there is performance overhead with using fault tolerance, but... you know.
Yeah, there's a few bits and bobs around, you know, one processor and that kind of stuff. But apart from that, yeah, great. It can save you in other areas. But I think Marathon will provide that, I believe, for Hyper-V. But again, at this stage, they've not kind of publicly announced. Or to me, you know, little fish, big pond. I don't tend to get that kind of information from those guys. But there you go.
So another bit of information you may or may not have. I've written a story recently about the licensing restrictions with live migration, the 90-day rule. Any idea if Microsoft will lift that restriction when Hyper-V R2 with live migration comes out next month?
Can we just recap the 90-day rule for our listeners in case
they don't
know?
Basically, if you don't have a volume license, you can only move a VM a certain number of times within 90 days. If you have a volume license, you can move them around between two data centers. Is that about right, Matt?
Kind of. So the rule before, because we have changed the rule, I think it was September last year, so it was around a year ago, around application workloads within virtual machines. So, you know, there's always this kind of thing about, well, I'm running one Exchange virtual machine on VMware, for example, ESX35, and I'm vMotioning it around, and I'm vMotioning it between three hosts, you know, one day it's on one day. And that, technically, because the Exchange license would have been assigned to the hardware and yet running a virtual machine, because you're running that virtual machine on different hosts, you should have an Exchange license for all three hosts. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of canned for a number of applications now, so you've got flexibility for those type workloads.
Right.
But the Windows Server operating system itself, that is still assigned license-wise to the physical hardware.
Right.
And what that means is, if I was to buy Windows Server Data Center Edition, for example, Data Center Edition has the massive benefit, whether you're virtualizing on Hyper-V, VMware, Citrix, or whatever, of giving you unlimited numbers of virtual machines per license.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've got a 2-proc box, a 2-CPU server, regardless of cores, I can buy 2 CPUs a data center, or I can buy an OEM, so you can buy, you know, on the tin, Data Center Edition, and that gives me unlimited running VMs on that box.
Mm-hmm.
If I have two hosts then in a cluster, or three in a cluster, and they've all got Data Center Edition assigned to them, then, you know, I've got complete, never non-compliant flexibility about where I move my workloads around. And in a lot of cases, Data Center works out massively more cost-effective than any of the Microsoft Windows Server license. I mean, you only have to think about your consolidation ratio, and typically it works out, whether you're running on VMware or Microsoft or whatever, that, you know, it's cost. So, yeah, you've got more flexibility with Data Center because you've got, you know, you assign the license to the host and run as many VMs, and you can migrate VMs that were on host 1 to host 2, and doesn't matter if you're running more on one than another and all that kind of stuff. So it's very, very flexible in that sense. Enterprise Edition, less so, because instead of getting unlimited free virtual machines per license, you only get 4 per license. So if I had a 3-node cluster, with one enterprise license assigned to each, one Windows Server enterprise license assigned to each, I would only get four free running instances of Windows Server for the VMs at a time. So if I had VMware DRS, for example, and that was kind of balancing loads out, and it deemed that I should be running 5 and 3 and 4, mm-hmm. on the 3 and the 4 node, then I'd be compliant. But on the node that I'm running 5 virtual machines, I'd be non-compliant. So I'd have to think about which is the most optimal way to license it. And that's why data center gives a lot of flexibility. So yeah, it's still assigned to the hardware, not necessarily just volume license. Like I said, you can get the benefits with OEM if you buy, you know, data center edition on OEM, or I don't know if enterprise ships OEM or not. Standard edition has always been a little bit kind of not really suited to virtualization, in the sense that if I assign a standard edition license to a host, I get one free virtual machine, so you don't really get a huge amount of benefit consolidation-wise from that. But then I can move that virtual machine to another node, but obviously I need to reassign the standard license, and that's something you can only do once every 90 days.
Yeah, so any indication?
So yeah, it's the halfway house, but I just don't know if that will change at all. I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay.
It did change quite considerably to allow, you know, the exchange and all that kind of stuff move freely. So it's getting there, and that was before R2 came along, so
right.
Who knows, unfortunately. Again, that's for somebody far more senior than me to kind of talk about.
Microsoft has this particular blog where they seem to love to take their product and compare it with VMware's and bring down VMware's product with all these bolded capitalized letters and all these different colors and so on and so forth. We interviewed VMware 2 records ago. I asked them what they thought about Hyper-VR 2, and they ended up saying that they thought the release was a non-event. So I was just curious, how does Microsoft see VMware, and like, where is Microsoft trying to fit into the space? Do they want to become the leader, or do they think, you know, everyone can share the love type thing? Or
Okay. So I'll deal with that one first. Okay. So why early attacking? I think a lot of the Microsoft blogs, and I would count mine in that as well, are the reason we write these blogs about Hyper-V and so on is, you know, because they're obviously very passionate about the technology, and it only usually takes one little thing on either side to kind of spark off a big debate. And yes, you know, it can get a little bit childish and a little bit petulant and that kind of thing, but and you know, I'm sure the people who write the blog, including myself, would hold our hands up and think, yeah, maybe that wasn't the best idea, but then, you know, it's done and we have to put the past behind us. But in terms of could we share the love, I think absolutely. You know, if you think about VMware's market share, it is much greater than anybody else's. But remember, it's only the market share of what's being virtualized. Mm-hmm. So there is still a massive piece of the pie to kind of for all organizations to go after. I think Microsoft's strategy is different from VMware's in terms of, you know, we don't have to make money out of the virtualization platform, hence why, you know, Hyper-V Server is free. Microsoft are looking to bring value to the customers by providing a comprehensive management suite that doesn't just encompass virtualization, because there's not that many in the grand scheme of things customers that have gone 100% virtual. So this is where something like a System Center suite with the combination of technologies for backup and monitoring and patching and deployment and, you know, virtual machine management and orchestration can offer a much greater kind of level of value, you know, on the Microsoft side, offer a much greater level of value. And we even see VMware, you know, I've had conference calls with VMware people around, you know, our customer, VMware's customer, wants to run something like System Center Operations Manager to monitor the stuff that's important to the customer, which is their Windows workloads and some non-Microsoft workloads as well. Regardless of whether they're running within VMware virtual machines, the biggest value to that customer is being able to kind of monitor those workloads and see that they're performing. So in some ways, it can be a hybrid within a customer. You know, they're running VMware, they've virtualized Microsoft, and they're managing it internals with Microsoft as well. So there's different ways, different customers will choose different solutions. But Microsoft is going very, very gung-ho on the management side of things and just enabling organizations to really pull out the efficiency of their organization. And, you know, I've been with partners this week, actually, and they were saying, yep, you know, the cost, the upfront licensing costs of VMware can put some customers off. But what I would say to a customer is, if there was still one key feature that was in, say, vSphere Enterprise Plus, and you needed that feature above all the others in any other platform, you know, and it was going to solve the critical business problem you've got in your organization, then you just have to go for the technology. You'd be mad not to. Whereas if, you know, other technologies like Citrix, like Microsoft and so on, ticked every other box and it was just this kind of feature that was kind of in the back of your mind, then you'd be kind of weighing things up in a lot more detail. But again, you know, the upfront licensing costs on VMware are typically more than Microsoft. But again, it's would that matter to all customers? No. So it's purely going to come down to, is it going to do what you want it to do? And we can get in cost debates, and we can get in cost per application debates, and which is a kind of new argument about, you know, we can run more VMs per host than you, and all that kind of stuff. But you know, you can go in those arguments till you're blue in the face. But at the end of the day, if I'm a customer working with a partner, the partner's going to give the best advice to that customer and say, look, you know, they both do X, Y, Z. Here's your list of requirements. Now let's choose which one. And you know, I just read today on some, I can't remember, it was a blog or a news post, or, but it was talking about, yep, VMware has the lion's, you know, share of the market. But with this particular customer they interviewed, they said, well, if we introduce VMware into our environment, which, you know, we were very close to doing, that's another kind of throat to choke in terms of support and management and so on. Whereas we're a Microsoft shop, we've got a couple of other bits and bobs, so it made sense for us to embrace kind of Microsoft virtualization. Mm-hmm. Is that reflective of everybody? Absolutely not. And mm-hmm. you know, Microsoft, and we'd be naive to think that. But you know, it's an indication of a certain segment of the kind of marketplace that would adopt Hyper-V based on the fact that it's Microsoft. But I would like people to adopt it based on the fact that System Center is a massively, massively powerful suite of technologies, and they're all technologies you can buy on their own. You know, you wouldn't buy vCenter unless you we're buying it with vSphere, right. Whereas a lot of organizations buy SCARM for operations manager for monitoring. They buy System Center Config Manager for patching and deployment. And, you know, so by grouping those technologies together in this suite means that at a low entry cost, customers can start to really kind of get a grip of their infrastructure, physical or virtual. You know, it's just a different message. And like I say, it would be great if, you know, we could all get along and, you know, share the love and just shake hands and say, you know, look, you know, you've got this, you are a virtualization company, you should be the best at virtualization in all essence, you know. Google are a search company, Hoover made vacuums, you know, they should have been the best, but now Dyson's on the scene now, you know, so things change. And I think that you know, there's a lot of space for different solutions to fit into, and, you know, we'll see. I think in the next 12 months will be very interesting indeed.
Yeah, and the cattiness keeps it interesting for us.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
especially watching on Twitter.
The pie flinging all over the place. You know, we'll have a custard pie on you, and then we'll have one back. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Oh dear. Brilliant. I'm lucky I'm still in a job, in all honesty.
All right. Well, hey, Matt, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Pleasure.